This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Congress will work some overtime when it has to return in December to complete passage of a huge omnibus spending bill. Ironically, disagreement over changes in federal rules on overtime is one of the obstacles that's delayed passage. If and when the bill's approved, the new rules will revise who qualifies to earn overtime pay. Businesses say they want clearer rules. Labor unions worry that many people now eligible for overtime will lose it. But this is a dispute about eligibility, not overtime itself. Whether we get paid for it or not, everyone knows that Americans do a lot of it. Surveys show that Americans are working more hours than ever before and more than people in almost any other country. Why? Later in the program, we'll continue our series with the authors of a new series of books on the seven deadly sins. Francine Prose joins us to discuss the seasonally appropriate sin of gluttony. But first, overtime in America. How much overtime do you work, and why? Do you depend on the extra money or resent the extra hours? Is there pressure from the boss or from yourself? Employer, worker, salary, hourly, or self-employed, give us a phone call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now for an update on what happened in Congress yesterday is Stephen Norton. He's a reporter for Congressional Quarterly, and he's with us from his office here in Washington, D.C. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Happy to be here.
Overtime, as we mentioned, there was one of the obstacles to an agreement in the big spending bill. So what happened yesterday in Congress?
Well, in the final hours of the first session of the 108th Congress, conferees, House and Senate members who were working on a huge omnibus spending bill finally reached an agreement with each other and with the White House and got it ready for passage. The only thing is that the House had already left and the Senate was pretty much getting ready to go out of town. So even though they've completed the substance of this agreement, the House won't actually vote on it until December 8th. The Senate could take it up a day thereafter, but it's not entirely clear that that will happen because there are no roll call votes scheduled in the Senate. So the final passage of this huge spending bill might not happen until after the first of the year.
In which case, they would have to get into one of those procedural maneuvers. Wouldn't they have to pass a continuing resolution so the federal government would not, shock horror, run out of money?
Well, they've already done that, Neil.
Good. I'm so relieved.
They're actually operating on a continuing resolution that goes to the end of January. I think they did that with the fear that they might not be able to complete the omnibus spending measure, which is, you know, the official spending bills for the government. They wouldn't be able to do that on time. So they passed the continuing resolution, and looks like they'll be able to pass the real deal before the continuing resolution runs out.
Well, the overtime provisions are one small part of a very huge bill, but when and if it's passed, what will these new rules mean for workers?
Well, first of all, I would say that this is a sort of a victory for the White House. There was sort of a tussle between the White House and Congress. The White House wanted to make these rules, and there were efforts in Congress to say you can't have the money unless you put these rules on hold. But what the rules would mean, basically, it updates the eligibility criteria for overtime pay. A lot of folks think that these have needed to be updated. And what the Department of Labor says is that 1.3 million new workers would become eligible for overtime pay. But on the other hand, people earning $65,000 or more, regardless of the kind of job they do, would no longer be able to receive overtime pay under U.S. labor standards. Now, business groups, many of them, have said that this is a long time in coming, that an update was needed.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of labor unions say that this is just a way to make a lot fewer people eligible for overtime pay.
Wouldn't it leave it open to the kind of situation where if you were making $60,000 and earning a fair amount of overtime as well, you could just get a $5,000 raise and say, well, there goes your overtime?
That's not entirely clear, and I think that's one of the reasons why there was some resistance from members of Congress to go along with this. Incidentally, the member of Congress probably leading the effort to block implementation of these rules was Senator Arlen Specter, who was a Republican from Pennsylvania. His subcommittee is responsible for writing this this particular part of the spending bill. And he wanted to maybe come up with a short-term compromise of having a commission a look at the new rules for 90 days, because I think there are these questions. And he wasn't alone in terms of the Republicans. Labor unions pushed very, very hard on this, and a number of moderate Republicans agreed with Specter. And for a while, it looked as though there was a standoff. The White House said that it was going to veto the spending bill if there was a prohibition on implementing these new rules. In the end, Specter and the others backed down in order to get the spending bill completed.
So if you were a betting man, you would say that come January, the omnibus spending bill will be passed with these provisions in it?
Absolutely.
Stephen Norton, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Steve Norton is a reporter for Congressional Quarterly, and he joined us from his office here in Washington, D.C. Alex Karen joins us now. He's a research consultant for Circadian Technologies, which is an international research and consulting firm that does research for CEOs and for corporations. He's the author of the report, Overtime in Extended Hours Operations, Benefits, Costs, Risks, and Liabilities. He's with us from his office in Lexington, Massachusetts, and nice of you to join us before you run away for the holiday.
Thank you very much.
People often use the term overtime to describe hours worked outside of the normal 40-hour week. That's not quite accurate, is it?
Well, we like to think of overtime as the hours in excess of 40 hours a week, basically because this is the hours outside of the traditional 9-to-5 day that we see. But, of course, there are salaried workers and the hourly workers, and different amounts of time apply for them as to what we would consider overtime.
So what is the trend for working overtime in the U.S.?
Well, we've just completed a study collected from the employers of the 24 million shift workers in the U.S. that show that the average overtime levels have reached an all-time high of 12.6%, which is about an average of 5 hours overtime extra per week.
And you say that even though some people might not be eligible for overtime, what happens to overtime workers has an effect on all workers. Now, how does that work out?
Absolutely. I mean, just because whether you're a shift worker or whether you're a normal daytime worker, mm-hmm. there are plenty of negative aspects of working too much overtime.
Like what?
For example, there are really three issues with working too much overtime. There are health problems, safety problems, and productivity problems. Health, for example, too much overtime can cause an increased risk of cardiovascular disease, sort of heart attacks and such like. So regularly working more than 11 hours a day is associated with a 3-time increase in the potential for heart problems.
Mm-hmm.
There are safety problems. Long work hours have been linked to increased risk in several studies, including nuclear plant safety, an increase in errors in medical facilities. Obviously, that's been a very hot topic recently, is overtime in the nursing and healthcare industry in general, and also the potential of increased accident rates after large numbers of hours at work.
Sure, you get tired and your concentration fades a little bit.
Absolutely, and this obviously has implications for the worker and the company, and ultimately even the brand image of the company should it be a big enough accident.
Now, when you looked at this very specific group of workers, shift workers, you found that this group is experiencing increased pressure to work overtime. What kind of pressure and why?
That's right. To some degree, shift work obviously is a very demanding work experience anyway, and what we see is that because shift workers have, there tends to be a slightly higher absenteeism, a slightly higher turnover, there also tends to be higher overtime within shift work. So managers need shift workers to come in and fill in positions, and obviously in a lot of shift working operations they run 24/7 for the very fact that there are positions that need to be filled and they need to keep machines running within that industry, and equally in retail there needs to be customers that need to be served.
Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And why don't we start with Alex, who's on the line with us from Miami, Florida.
Hi. Just wanted to make a comment about overtime in terms of I think that even though apparently we are working more overtime than before. I mean, I do think that the standard of living we have here is a direct result of that, and that, you know, overtime is not necessarily a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you work overtime, Alex?
Well, not in my official job. I work 9 to 5, but I am a musician, and I do work in my music, you know, all the time after office hours. So in that sense, I do work overtime, but, I don't mind it at all.
And presumably you do that. I assume you like being a musician, but I assume the extra money comes in handy, too.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Alex, thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. And Alex Karen, Alex's story, he's obviously not a shift worker, or at least not under that definition, but clearly extra money for a lot of people is a very important benefit of overtime.
Absolutely. Overtime is incredibly important, and limited amounts of overtime are good for the company. They provide flexibility, and they provide the ability to meet demand if it suddenly increases. And it's great for the workers who want to work it. It's the problem with excess overtime that, that we start to run into trouble.
And there are people who complain about being assigned overtime. Yeah, if it's voluntary, sure, but no, some people don't like it when they're mandated to work overtime.
That's right, and we're seeing somewhat of a backlash against that. There are many states who are saying that you can't mandate overtime within the nursing industry, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, mandated overtime is definitely an issue.
Let's get another caller in. This is Allison, who's on the line with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
I'm calling because I'm a teacher, a high school English teacher, and I don't get paid overtime, but I certainly work a lot of extra hours on the weekend and after school time to get my work done. And I feel like it's never done. So,
neither a woman's nor a teacher's work is ever done.
Yeah, huh?
Yeah.
I got double duty. But I don't know. Like, it seems to me, especially this year, we're trying to meet the No Child Left Behind standards, and those are very, very demanding for teachers, and teachers are not being recompensed at all for meeting those new requirements, which requires a lot of paperwork that you just don't have time to do in a class when you have 30, 35 kids that require your attention.
I assume, is there a union there?
No. I happen to work in a charter school, so but the fact of the matter is that I get paid more than most as a starting teacher than most starting teachers do in public schools, and the work is overwhelming. That's why we have a dearth of teachers, because you're just never done, and your life is really not your own on the weekends, because you know that you should be grading papers or getting ready for the next lesson, you know. So
would more money make it worth it?
Sometimes I think so. You know, because then when I do have my free time, I can afford to do something.
Well, Allison, I'm giving you instructions. Take tomorrow off.
You know what? I took today off. Have a great day.
You too, Allison.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Alex Karen, in the few seconds we have left, I don't think her situation is unusual.
Absolutely not. And her point about the doing the double duty is definitely very true. Also, there's plenty of people who are doing second-time jobs to make ends meet, and even though one job may not go over 40 hours, then the both combined can easily.
Okay, thanks very much for being with us.
No problem, thank you.
And I hope you enjoy your Thanksgiving, too.
You too.
Alex Karen is a research consultant for Circadian Technologies, an international research and consulting firm. It does research for CEOs and corporations. He's the author of the report, Overtime in Extended Hours Operations, Benefits, Costs, Risks, and Liabilities. He spoke with us today from his office in Lexington, Massachusetts. We're talking about working overtime and why we Americans work so much. We're going to take more of your calls when we come back from a break. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or you can send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about overtime, whether you're salaried or hourly. How much overtime do you clock in every week? Call us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is someone who's looked at the trends in the cultural value we place on work. Joanne Chula is professor of ethics and leadership studies at the University of Richmond and author of The Working Life, The Promise and Betrayal of Modern Work. She's with us from her office in Richmond, Virginia, and good of you to join us on Talk of the Nation.
My pleasure.
So other than the obvious of extra money, why do people work overtime?
Well, I think there's certain categories of reasons why people do. I mean, some simply enjoy the possibility of making more money, so that's fine. Some are forced to work overtime and aren't compensated for it, and we see a lot of that going on, and that trend has been growing over the past few years. And then there's a lot of people who would actually prefer to work overtime and be compensated with time instead of money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting group of people, and that group of people has grown significantly as we've seen the amount of work hours go up over the past few years.
I was interested to see that in the overtime rules that are being discussed in Congress, and as we heard earlier, are likely to be passed come January, that there's a barrier. It's $65,000 a year. You're defined as above that. You don't have to get overtime.
Mm-hmm.
Is that sort of reflected in a way in society?
Well, when you look at any proposed legislation like that, there's two things you have to ask yourself, and that is, first of all, who's in favor of it? And if employers are, you usually have to watch out. And the second question is, does it help the least advantaged? And I think this one doesn't necessarily hurt the least advantaged, but if you think of those $65,000 a year people, the reason why unions are probably upset is because they may be union members, and overtime for them is more expensive.
I see. And
it would be one of the reasons employers would be in favor of it.
Nevertheless, those who are regarded as professionals, that class, they're kind of expected to work overtime.
Yeah, well, there's a couple issues. I mean, I was listening to the school teacher who called in,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, a job like that's really difficult because I'm sure, as she knows, and as a college professor I know, it'd be very hard to keep track of how much time you worked overtime. So that's one of the difficulties.
Yep.
You know, because we have to grade papers and stuff like that. I don't even know how you would do it. So some jobs, it's very difficult to keep track of it, and that's one of the problems. So, but that still doesn't get around the issue that maybe if you are asking them to do a lot more, they simply should be paid more. So there's that. Then there are jobs that, there's two kinds of jobs that are, one is task-oriented and one is time-oriented. A time-oriented, you work 9 to 5 in a department store, for example, and your work is determined by the clock. Task-oriented are people like school teachers, doctors, professionals who work on doing discrete sets of things. And those are very often hard to keep track of as well in terms of time.
Let's get another caller on the line. Jeff's with us from Smithtown, New York.
Hello.
Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I work both sides. I worked salaried. And I left that after about 12 years. I worked for well under 60 thou,
mm-hmm.
at least 10 thou under that, for a company that pretty much had it under control by making salaried anybody who appeared to be working enough hours to complete their projects.
Mm-hmm.
And when you saw it, in other words, when you saw somebody who was apparently dedicated enough to put in the overtime to finish a project,
yeah,
we merely salaried him.
So make him ineligible for the overtime.
Make him ineligible. And my comment here is I'm just very, I'm not very happy to hear of the government basically using the same tactics.
Okay, Jeff, thanks very much.
No problem. And thank you.
And have a happy Thanksgiving.
Both of you.
Okay, thanks very much. Joanne, why is it, do you think, that Americans work so hard? We heard the statistics. Americans work more hours than they ever have and more than people in almost any other country.
Well, I mean, I think there's two kinds of reasons. One kind of reason is there's a lot to gain from working hard in America. We got lots of stuff we can buy that's really fun, lots of good things to spend money on. Our standard and our aspirations for how we want to live keeps going up. So there's the consumerist side. There's also the consumer debt side, which is a big issue. We're huge debtors in this country. So you got to work hard to keep paying those credit card bills. And then I think the other reason that we work hard is we find it rewarding, and that's a good reason. And then the flip side of it, which may be what the last gentleman caller was alluding to, is something I call the work ethic of fear. And that is that a lot of people are working like mad because they've seen the kinds of downsizings that have gone on over the past few years, and they're afraid if they don't put in those extra hours, if the company downsizes, they'll be the first to go. And that is a very stressful position, and there are a lot of Americans in that position today.
Here's an email we got from Don White in Long Island. I refuse to work any overtime, he writes, preferring instead to spend all my spare time with my family. As I see it, no one ever said on his or her deathbed, gosh, I'd wish I'd spent more time at the office.
That's right.
Let's get another. Matt is with us from Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Okay, yourself?
Good, thank you. Hey, just a couple quick points. I'm actually, I guess, as your last caller, I'm on both sides of the equation. I'm actually an officer in the Navy, and as such, no, I'm salaried when the concept of overtime doesn't even come in the picture when you spend 6 months out to sea. But secondly, when I was in college, I worked for FedEx, loading planes, throwing boxes, and there's many, many, many individuals out there I know who worked over, as a matter of fact, sought it out. Would do everything they could to get all the overtime that they could, and I think that the list of reasons there that your guest gave, I think it was very inclusive, but one thing I would like to add to it is that it's easier, a lot of people working hourly jobs, those are, I believe the economic term is transitory, they're working, or entry level, they're working towards something else.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have, you know, a family, you have educational goals you're trying to meet, and you have a job that's you know, you go to work, you do your job, and you go home. It's much easier to get overtime, to work overtime, to work a couple extra hours that day, or work 3 days at 10 or 11 hours each, and then only have one job to deal with, taking up your time. There seems to me to be a disconnect between many people putting up objections to the concept of overtime or trying to manipulate it and change it, and the people who are actually out there doing it. I find in my experience, and I've worked several other retail jobs, and there's people who, you know, will do what it takes. They will work 60 hours at one job, and they'll go and work another 20 hours a week at another job. That's just what makes them happy. You see a lot of retirees who work not because they particularly want to or because they have to, but because they want to. They want something to occupy the time, and that's what makes them happy. And some of your callers, some of the points I think are being brought out is that the concept of overtime is a necessary evil for companies, and it is, but there's economic advantages for them as well. I think you've brought that out as well.
Okay.
As far as being able to limit the amount of the number of people that you're paying health benefits for, so on and so forth, and balancing that against just paying someone a little extra to work a few extra hours.
Mm. Matt, those are good points. Thanks very much.
Mm-hmm.
And hope enjoy your holiday.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, bye. Joanne Chula, I guess as Matt's point is, some of us are workaholics.
Yeah, some people are, and you know, more power to them. I mean, I think that's certainly fine, and Americans believe in working for what they want and what they need, so his point is extremely well taken.
The people who would likely seem to be working the most overtime, I'm not sure there are statistics on this, but would be the self-employed, the people mm-hmm. who are assigning themselves overtime.
Yeah, and of course, you know, what really matters in this whole discussion is what kind of work people are doing and what kind of income they're making. So, yeah, when it's yours, the notion of work in your life is almost more seamless than it is in cases where you're working for someone else. But, of course, the other reason why this whole thing has come on the congressional agenda is the simple reason that companies have tried to get themselves down to a lean size, and they're trying to get the most amount of work out of all of their employees because they're working with less now. And that's one of the results of the downsizing that we've seen over the past 10 years. So everybody is working a little bit harder because there's less people working with them in a lot of places.
Now, there are a lot of people are entitled to overtime, but sometimes they do not claim it.
Mm-hmm.
Why? And I guess, is that showing off to the boss, or was that the fear you were talking about before?
Well, there's a little bit of that because, you know, the other thing, there's been some interesting studies on people not taking paternity and full maternity leave.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, why not take such a wonderful benefit? Well, part of it, again, is this feeling that if you're away, or if you claim too much or seem to want too much, that it will put you in disfavor. So I think there's a tremendous anxiety out there about what you need to hold on to your job these days, and that, I think, is driving a lot of these issues related to overtime and also stress on families.
Joe Robinson joins us now. He's also studied the working life, and he's the author of Work to Live, The Guide to Getting a Life. He's with us from his home in Santa Monica, California, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Nice to be here.
Now, you think Americans work too much, and you blame part of this on what you call bravado. What do you mean by that?
Well, that's true. I mean, some of the changes, as we've been discussing here, are structural and from downsizing and so forth, but there's also a lot of self-infliction that takes place. And that comes largely from this feeling that we have in the workplace, which is governed by bravado, who can take the most, who's still standing at the end of a 12 or a 14-hour day. Promotions are often based on that level of commitment, who's going to put in the most hours. And I think that we've gradually, or actually not so gradually, gotten ourselves into a competition to see who can have less of a life than the next guy.
Does this go back to, I guess, what used to be called the Puritan work ethic?
Well, yeah, it's been completely secularized, but it's, if you look back at what that was all about, fear of idleness and the only thing having value being productive endeavor, we are exactly doing what they prescribed back in those days. And you know, that sort of gets to the nut of the bravado syndrome, which is it's about our own self-worth. We create the self in this country through labor more than people do in other nations. And as a result of attaching only value to what we produce and get done in the course of a day, anytime we try to step back from that, it causes feelings of lack of self-worth. And so it keeps us on this full-blast track, thinking that's the way to go when it's actually counterproductive.
One item that I guess might be counted among in the bravado category is every time the productivity figures are announced and everybody says, well, you know, Americans' productivity is going above that of other nations. Is that bravado or is that reality?
Well, it's a mixture of both. Yeah, we tend to puff our chests out regularly on that topic and want to be number one in the world on productivity. And by some statistics, we are. If you measure productivity per person, which is how we normally do it here, yeah, because of all the additional hours we're working. The average person is working 200 more hours a year than they did back in the 70s. But if you look at it through the more efficient gauge of productivity per hour, we're not number one. Countries such as Norway and Belgium are more productive than we are. Norwegians, for instance, have an output per hour of about $32. Americans are about at the $32 mark, and that's well below the $38 per hour output of Norwegians, for instance.
We are speaking with Joe Robinson and Joanne Chula. The subject is overtime and why Americans work so much of it. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's another listener. Mickey's on the line with us from Baltimore.
Yes, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
This is a wonderful topic. I think I might have the ultimate overtime job. I have two part-time jobs. And they say there's no such thing as a part-time job. I think it's true. Plus, I'm a mother. But I love my jobs. The one, I'm an arts administrator. And I feel that in the arts, we have to work harder and smarter in this country, harder and smarter than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
My other job, I'm an entrepreneur, and I actually employ others. Those folks work as much as they want to, and I will have to work more in order to reap the benefits. But, you know, in that sense, my work is my lifestyle. And, you know, it's okay. That's my choice.
Your work is your lifestyle. In essence, you're one of those people who assigns yourself a lot of overtime.
Yes. It seems inevitable. But, you know, it's okay. You know, I'm not going to go and complain about myself. Or, you know, and the folks that work for me are also doing this because they love the work and it's, you know, it's obviously brings them a lot of benefits.
And extra money, too.
Exactly.
Okay. Mickey, enjoy the holiday.
Thank you. You too.
Appreciate it. Here's an email we got from Dan Brown. Any employer who forces staff to work more than they want is stupid. A business is only as good as its staff. If they're not happy, Can't they just hire more people? I had a situation where staff members want to work more than 40 hours a week, but I can't let them because I can't afford to pay time and a half. I have to just hire another person, so they get another part-time job somewhere else for regular pay, and then I have an additional scheduling problem. We ask staff members how many hours they want to work, and that's mostly what we do, except for special situations. And Joe Robinson, would you say that's a fairly enlightened approach?
That is very progressive, yeah, and it actually mirrors the majority of Americans. You know, a lot of the pressure, peer pressure that people feel to keep working around the clock and be the last one at the office is this sense that everybody around us is doing it and we don't want to be a wimp. But if you look at studies, what they show is that the average American would, if they had their preference, would work about 30 hours a week. So, and it actually would make them no less efficient and productive, because one of the things about chronic overtime is that it is not efficient. Fatigue studies going back to the 20s have shown that the longer you work, the more the returns diminish in the days that follow. If you work seven 50-hour weeks in a row, you'll get no more done than if you work seven 40-hour weeks in a row. And one other measure of this phenomenon is images of MRI images of fatigued brains look exactly like ones that are sound asleep.
Perhaps not surprising. Joanne Chula, I wanted to bring you back into the conversation as you we're just about to wrap up our discussion. Mm-hmm. As you look ahead, over time, the trend seems to be that we're going to be doing more of it now rather than less.
Yeah, but I mean, going back to the previous point, I think what employers continually fail to recognize is the fact that there's only so much a person can work in a day and do a decent job. And they've never understood it, and you're right to go back to the 20s and look at those fatigue studies. And I think they'll reach a point of diminishing returns when a lot of employers are going to have to say, you know, it makes more sense to hire extra people. So it may have to get worse before it gets better, but I don't think it's going to continue forever getting worse.
So are either of you guys working tomorrow?
Not I.
Not me.
Well, have a great day off then.
Okay, you too, Neil.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I do have to work tomorrow, but that's all right.
Okay.
Joe Robinson is the author of Work to Live, The Guide to Getting a Life. He was with us from his home in Santa Monica, California. And Joanne Chula is professor of ethics and leadership studies at the University of Richmond, the author of The Working Life, The Promise and Betrayal of Modern Work. She was with us from her office in Richmond, Virginia. We've been talking about why Americans work so much overtime. Coming up after we return from the break, overkill on food, gluttony, one of the seven deadly sins. If you'd like to join the conversation on gluttony, our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, or send us an email, TOTN@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.